How much to the Buddha? How much to the Dharma? How much to the Sangha? So today my talk is called What Zen Acceptance Is and Why It Matters. So I'm talking about this in part. I mean, I guess there's a lot of things in the world right now that are difficult to accept, so it's relevant in that way. But for myself, it's just been coming up more in Zazen as a way to approach my Zazen as cultivating deep acceptance of everything. And really, this is about, in a way, this is a way, a typical Zen way, to talk about what the central teaching, the central original teaching of Buddhism, which is about the cessation of dukkha. So dukkha being this dissatisfactoriness, this stress, sometimes suffering that we add to things, that when we encounter difficulty, pain, loss, etc., those things can hurt. We call that pain. But we can add dukkha to our experience by, you know, classically in Buddhism, they talked about desire, you know, desire for things to be other than how they are. So your desire conflicts with reality. And that the teaching is, of course, that we can completely let go of that, of dukkha. Like, we have, dukkha is completely optional. Now, pain and difficulty is not completely optional. That's part of just being alive. But the dukkha piece is something we can let go of. So our one way to be talk about this is that practice, acceptance. Acceptance is letting go of that desire for things to be other than how they are. So this is something that we practice moment by moment. We practice it in our daily life. We practice it in our relationships. We practice it in our Zazen. So I wanted to start off with, I don't know about you, but there's part of me that really doesn't like the word acceptance. And I don't really like the idea of it. And really, I think this comes down to the limits of language. I was looking around today online for, like, is there a better word? Is there a better word for this? Unfortunately, I didn't find one. So there's a couple definitions of accept that that I think are behind at least my resistance to this practice. Which I do not think apply. They're not, this isn't what we mean. So accept can mean to consider something or someone satisfactory, or to believe in the goodness of something, or to receive by agreeing or consenting. So some synonyms are affirm, approve, trust, or even favor. So I have a resistance to acceptance because, frankly, some things are not satisfactory. I'm not going to just, well, that's acceptable. And that's has to do with aspects of myself, aspects of other people, aspects in the world that are just, I cannot and I refuse to somehow do some mental gymnastics so that I find those things satisfactory. Besides the fact that we, part of our practice is taking the Bodhisattva vow. So beings are numberless, I vow to free them. So in a sense, it is not acceptable that beings are being oppressed or abused or whatever. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. So, you know, those are, we all have limitations. We all have flaws. We all have bad habits. And part of our bodhisattva vow is to keep working on those things, not go, well, you know, they're satisfactory. Dharma gates are boundless. We had a nice conversation yesterday at the Saturday Sangha meeting about this and how exploring our life as a continuous sense of path and embracing or engaging the obstacles that we come across as koan is part of this Dharma gates are boundless, that our aspiration is to continue to grow and explore and learn and become more and more liberated. So those are just the first three aspects. So there's definitely like that is not about just finding some peace of mind by concluding things are good enough and satisfactory. So this is not what we mean by acceptance in practice. And I encourage people, if you encounter something in the teachings that just doesn't sit right, it's like acceptance, but why would you accept that? And what that you honor your own questioning, your own resistance, your own skepticism. That is part of what is guiding you in your practice. So the way that my Dharma grandmother, Roshi Kennett, put it is, you are right to doubt what you think it means. So there's a little bit of humility in that approach. I think it means, it seems like it's saying that I should just accept things that are unacceptable. That doesn't seem right. So we doubt our impression of it. And then it arises naturally a question of, well, what else might this mean? So fortunately, I mean, in terms of that limitations of language, and I was looking for other words that might be appropriate, but there are alternative definitions to accept, which are actually appropriate. So there's two definitions here: to agree to take something. So there's a sense we are agreeing to take reality as it is, or to believe that something is true. So the synonyms of these kinds of definitions are recognize, acknowledge, understand, allow, perceive. So I kind of like the term allow as well, because the functional, like stepping aside from dictionary definitions, the functional definition that I've come up with, at least for myself, in terms of acceptance in our practice, is stop resisting the way things have turned out. And two, allow appropriate response to arise without tying everything back to our sense of self. So acceptance, the way that I think that we are meant to practice with it, this acceptance is about the past leading up to the present. For one reason or another, a whole string of causes and conditions ended up, and here we are. We are this person, we're in these relationships, we're in this situation, our world is this way. This is just there. We may not like it, there's no arguing with it. Of course, we do argue with it, but now that acceptance says absolutely nothing about what happens from here on out. So I would say it's acceptance about the past and leading up to this present situation. And then the future is will arise. So it doesn't say that we're not going to try to change something. It doesn't say that we're going to stop and go passive. Nothing like that. It says nothing about the future. So it's really about, as Pema Chodron says, starting where we are. So that's where I kind of like those other definitions of agree, which is to agree to take something. It's like, all right, I really would rather not have ended up with this situation, but but this is what I've got to work with. So I'm kind of agreeing to take something and to believe something is true. And this is where I kind of like the word allow, in the sense that you're allowing reality to be what it is, as if you had any say in it anyway. But there's a sense that we unless we face reality, unless we give up our denial, our struggle against what is, our resentment about what is, then our ability to actually respond skillfully is severely compromised. Not to mention the fact that we can make ourselves miserable. So I will throw out the idea that lack of acceptance always has something to do with our sense of self. Results in our desire for things to be other than how they have turned out. And this isn't a judgmental statement. So it's, I don't think it's helpful to say, if you're feeling any resistance or dukkha or lack of acceptance, that's because you're selfish. You know, it's not a moral judgment. It's not a, you're just selfish and self-centered and that's why you're making yourself miserable. It's much more subtle than that. Our sense of ourselves is pervasive. It's something that is very, our whole practice is about learning to recognize it and question it and soften it and let go of it. It's not an easy thing. So what we do is interpret everything through the lens of self. What I believe, what I want, what I think is right and wrong, how things are going to affect me, how you're going to affect me, how I feel about the situation, fears I might have about the future. So this is, you know, I just, like, everything that I encounter over the course of the day, I just interpret in terms of how it relates to me. That's, you know, it's how we evolved. It's natural. There's a utility to that sense of self. It's how we navigate the practical world and make choices. But ultimately that narrative that we're telling ourselves is a gloss. You know, it's an explanation, a simplified explanation, an interpretation of reality. So it's never going to reflect reality itself. And the way that things have turned out it's not personal. We end up taking it all personally, in a subtle way or obvious way, of course, if somebody's obviously hurt us or something like that. But even just the way the world is something that we can kind of take personally. So, so what does it feel like to engage the present moment and work on our resistance to the way things are? So I would take a moment to be still, and maybe I'm doing this on the cushion and maybe at other times, and putting aside all of other activities in order to be aware of my own experience, turning toward the pervasive or sometimes acute feeling of dukkha or dis-ease, the feeling of being dissatisfied. Sometimes in my zazen, I will think, sit as if everything is okay. But there'll be a little part of me that's like, oh, you know, but not that part, not that, you know. By doing that kind of exercise, just like we do with metta, and we try to sincerely feel goodwill toward a being, and in so doing, we end up encountering the obstacles, right? We end up encountering the limits. So in that sense, when we sit zazen and we're really trying to let go and sit as if everything is okay, as if there's absolutely nothing that we have to do, then we encounter the resistance. Feeling of being, if things aren't quite right, there could be a nauseating tightness in gut and chest, an objection, frustration, pain, sense of misfortune, loss, or injustice. sense of waiting, as if life isn't really happening yet. It's not, this isn't the time. Things aren't ready. Things aren't in order. At some point, then we will really, really relax and appreciate our lives. So I might notice the dukkha is associated with some aspect of myself, a way that I am, or my habits that I don't like, or my life, my situation in the outside world. Maybe someone has treated me unfairly, disrespectfully, even abusively. Maybe I have ongoing financial or health challenges, troubling relationships that keep me guessing. Can't just wash my hands of them, have to keep engaged with them, but are always challenging. Witnessing the suffering of beings in the world, subject to injustice and greed and destruction. My own harmful habits of indulging anger or abusing intoxicants or laziness, or, you know, the kind of habits which, on the one hand, we've learned maybe to accept to some extent, but on the other hand, it's like, no, these are actually causing harm, and I actually want to live more free of them. So I'll throw out here the, you may have heard me talk about this before, the etymology of the word dukkha. So this is from a footnote from a translation of the Bhagavad Gita by Winthrop Sargent. And I've repeated this so many times that part of me is like, I sure hope this is true, because I haven't necessarily run into any corroborating references, but it's an obscure kind of topic. So he says, it is perhaps amusing to note etymology of the words sukha, the name of my dog, pleasure, comfort, or bliss, and dukkha, misery, unhappiness, and pain. Ancient Aryans who brought Sanskrit to India were nomadic horse and cattle breeding people who traveled in horse or ox-drawn vehicles. Su and du are prefixes indicating good or bad. The word ka, in later Sanskrit meaning sky or ether or space, was originally the word for hole, particularly the axle hole of one of the Aryans' vehicles. Thus, sukha meant originally having a good axle hole, while dukkha meant having a poor axle hole, leading to discomfort. So I don't know, that seems so appropriate. Whereas, like, it kind of takes a whole moral good and bad equation out of it, and it's just like, dukkha is just this ongoing discomfort, unnecessary discomfort. And when we can let it go, things just go much more smoothly. So I feel like it is dukkha which keeps me from feeling fully alive and authentic. It causes me to hold everything at arm's length while I'm trying to figure out and solve the problem that's causing me dukkha. It leads me to struggle to put everything right so the discomfort will go away. Oh, cool. I just got a backup from Adine, who said he heard that from a Pali teacher as well. Cool. So I just want to take 10 minutes to do a breakout, and this can be completely optional. If you don't want to do a breakout, just don't accept the invitation to your room, and just turn your video off and meditate or take a break or whatever. But if you go into a room, to take a moment to reflect and then share what is something you find it difficult, if not impossible, to accept about yourself, about your life, about the world in general. I mean, I don't have to limit yourself to one, but but there's not, I'll make the breakouts last 10 minutes, so not a lot of time. So what is something you find it difficult, if not impossible, to accept? So, all right, welcome back. So some people in our group were saying this was a tough question. But then once we started talking for a while, we were like, oh yeah, yeah, there's that too. Yeah, that's hard to accept too. You know, Buddhism is a practical, very practical practice, religion, whatever. If refusing to accept the way something has turned out made the world a better place, if it worked, we would do it. It's not just a matter of like, that's, not holy, so you shouldn't resent the way things turned out. Saying it just that is completely unhelpful. So remembering that our acceptance is about making our peace with accepting the way things have turned out, the past leading to the present, not about what we do from here or how we respond. Because in that sense, if you're looking to the future, there's no way that we should accept many things in our lives and in our world. Not if we're bodhisattvas. But we're never, ever going to fix everything. Our ride, in terms of our axle hole, our ride is never going to be perfectly smooth, ever. But we do have just this pervasive, stubborn hope that if we just keep on the way we've been going, if we just kind of resist internally, if we just maintain our internal outrage, that things will change, things will work, relief, we'll find relief. So in a present moment, if I allow myself to fully recognize and feel dukkha, the experience of body, mind, and heart, not just an idea, and invite myself to give it up, because dukkha is just an attitude I'm taking toward my experience. So, for example, in terms of how I feel about myself, I might notice how limited or unmindful or selfish or silly or irresponsible or unlikable or insensitive or whatever I at the moment I think I am. I might invite myself to say, "You're okay," like a kind parent would say to a child. You know, a comment on the fundamental worthiness as a human being, not an evaluation of winners and losers and your rank on the human scale, but just that unconditional, you know, hopefully you had a parent that was that kind and unconditional, but maybe hopefully you've had other people in your life, someone that you really trust. You trust they're not just lying to you, that they really, really, you're okay. You're totally okay. Or another exercise that I've done with myself is, all right, so I might say I have this shortcoming, I have that, I whatever. And to kind of say to myself, like I've got the internal, dialogue going on. Say to myself, so what? So if you say, oh, I have this, I'm always stressed and then I'm irritable with my loved ones. So what? And I don't know if it's the same for you, but there's a part of me that goes like, what do you mean? So what? Like, there's just this sense of like, this is completely unacceptable. This, this shortcoming, this flaw, this tendency, this habit is just completely unacceptable. So we're not really saying so what, again, in the sense of like from here on out, we're not going to be a bodhisattva and we're just going to indulge our bad habits, but to really say so what? And we reckon it, for me, it helps me put that into context. Whereas when I'm coming to it from a self-centered perspective, my flaws seem just terrible. My shortcomings, my limitations, oh dear. But when it's like, so what in the larger sense, and you just think like, we all have our flaws, you know? There's a lot worse ways that we could be if we're doing our best. A lot of times the things that are very difficult for us to accept about ourselves or our lives are really not that big a deal if we let go of some of that self-centeredness. And in terms of life outside, notice the ways that life feels unacceptable. And can we work on resigning ourselves to being fully present with our lives in this world, even though it is pervasively inadequate and flawed and full of kind of indescribable? And also notice where, to some extent, our resistance to the way things are is in part, even here, is kind of self-centered, where it's about how is it going to make me feel? This makes me feel really sad. I want to live in a just world. I don't want to have to deal with this morally ambiguous situation. I don't want to have to be faced with this suffering or these challenging choices or this need to sacrifice or whatever it is. So, I mean, I'm not saying, you know, there is genuine compassion in there on behalf of others, but there's often, you know, when that terms of, I guess what it feels like to me is that when there's pain, when there's grief, compassion, the pain of loss, whatever the, there's a certain kind of, it doesn't feel good, but I don't know, there's a cleanness to it where dukkha has a twisted quality. It has a stressful kind of stuck quality, an icky quality to it that that's it's not very eloquent, but that's kind of how I tell the difference, right? Here's some sincere pain and then here's some like extra stuff that I might say, you know, what is it that I can let go of there? So even I think it's completely unacceptable, the fact that humans are causing the complete breakdown of the natural life support systems on our planet. That is not acceptable in terms of like here on out. But a lot of stress can be relieved, and in a way, I for myself, I can find a certain kind of peace and a certain kind of strength from just deeply accepting the way things are. That, for better or worse, human beings ended up with these big brains and the ability to create technology and to have an outsized footprint on the planet, and we're destroying ourselves. I mean, another way, and you know, we'll open it up here in a second and people can pop in with their own ways of practicing with this, but I guess another way to look at it is letting go of the shoulds. It shouldn't be this way. People shouldn't be this way. Like, well, they are. We are. So, just to give you another little analogy, I kind of imagine it's just like the Wizard of Oz, where at the beginning, Dorothy is totally unhappy with her life, so she, goes off to the land of Oz, and then at the end, she wakes up and like there she is in the life that she was so dissatisfied with, but because of her experiences, it's a different relationship, and she's so grateful to just be right there. I feel like sometimes that's where, when we can recognize and let go of our dukkha or accept the way things are, there's a we can be very grateful for our life and ourselves, just as they are. So I will leave it there. We have about 12 minutes to just feel free to unmute yourself and make a comment or question if you like.
Thank you for the etymology of sukha and dukkha. That picture is helpful. And I like the word icky. It's like a barnacle when I hold on to a negative thought.
Yeah.
Hello. Yeah, we were talking in the breakout group. Can you hear me okay? Yeah, we were talking about that great breakout group about that, wheel analogy too. And it made me think of a shopping cart and how just awful that is. It's like a gut feeling as you're going down. When you first get that cart, and it's like there's no turning back. You're already far enough away. You can't take the cart back. It's your cart. And it's going like this. And it's like, oh, but it seems like halfway through the shopping trip is about when I stop focusing on the cart wheel jerking, and then just get about my business. And then when I get out of the store, I have forgotten completely about the cart.
I like that one.
Yeah, I'm really liking these analogies, although the barnacle one made me think that it's attaching to me, which is a kind of different than what you've been saying about letting go. And so maybe I blame the barnacle.
Another image, I mean, it's not Buddhist, but it's the whole like the reaching into a jar and grabbing something and you can't get your hand back out. And all you got to do to get your hand out is to let go, but you don't want to let go. Ah!
Would it be wrong to just think of some people as being bad axle holes?
That's a good question. I invite other people to jump in here, but I think it helps me in terms to accept myself the way I am and accept other people the way they are. But it's like that acceptance does not mean we're satisfactory, right? Acceptance means this is the way we are. This is just, and so some people are more harmful than others. Some people are more deluded. Some people are, they may have a history and an excuse, they may not. This is where I kind of like the mythology of rebirth as well, where it's like, well, I don't really have a good excuse in this lifetime for being such an asshole, but maybe in a previous life, they suffered some tough times. But because there's a way that if we think of acceptance as being we have to like everything or approve of everything or embrace everything, that just doesn't fly. But if we think of it as we can still have our discernment, we can still recognize this being or this habit or this situation is not from here on out, this is not something that we should just accept. But if we accepted it this way, I don't know, relieves a lot of that extra ickiness.
Two things come to mind for me. One is that there's the human and the accepting the humanness of the person does not mean ipso facto I must accept the behaviors that person does. Or, and another part for that is reading something that the Dalai Lama had said when he was being trained, and he was hearing all about the abuse that the different monks and lamas had when they were imprisoned by the Chinese. And in one of his trainings, they said, and then it even got almost worse. And the Dalai Lama said, how could it be even worse? I mean, how much more could you endure? How could it possibly get worse? And his teacher said, we almost lost our compassion mm-hmm. for the Chinese. Mm-hmm. That was the worst part.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's really heavy. It's interesting because we often reflect on not self in our practice and how we can work on separating, how we can see our own not self. But it's interesting to observe here, we have to also try and observe the not self of others when they do harmful behaviors. Like, just as we don't want to associate, but just as we don't want to tie ourselves to the dukkha, yeah, it's helpful to not see others as their dukkha. They're not self too.
Yeah. Like that.
I think that's also part of the essence of Tonglen practice.
I just wanted to share something really quick because it's amazing that this is what we're talking about today. Yesterday, I was trying to write lyrics to a song, and I was thinking of about acceptance and using that as a theme for the song. So I'm sitting here in front of a sheet of paper with all these lyrics about acceptance, and I drew from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's this famous part of the book that whenever anybody brings it up in a meeting, you know, it's on page 417. And when somebody complains about their life, so they go, hey, page 417, you know. But it's acceptance is the answer to all of my problems today. When I am disturbed, it is because I find some person, place, thing, or situation, some fact of my life unacceptable to me, and I can find no serenity until I accept that person, place, thing, or situation as being exactly the way it is supposed to be at this moment. Nothing happens in God's world by mistake. Unless I could accept my alcoholism, I could not stay sober. Unless I accept my life completely in life's terms, I cannot be happy. I need to concentrate not so much on what needs to be changed in the world or on what needs to be changed in, as on what needs to be changed in me and my attitudes. So it's really neat that kind of how, you know, this crossover there. With the Buddhist concept of acceptance.
Yeah, it's not about Buddhism, it's about what works.
Anybody have a video of how to do proper walking meditation? Because I don't know what I just kind of like walk to my kitchen and get a sandwich. Like, I don't know what to do. So if someone could share with me something.
Oops, that was one thing, you know. If you came to our actual Zendo, we would have shown you. But we're like, just go do some walking.
Yeah, so I just kind of walk around.
I like to, but if you look up walking meditation online.
Like, I'll look up Soto Zen walking meditation or something.
Yeah, so it's basically just a little half foot length step with each exhalation. And you just, in the Zendo, we walk around a little circuit, but at home, you just kind of walk back and forth. Oh, look!
Oh, Adin, always coming to the rescue.
Adin put in a link.
Thank you, Adin.
Any last comments about acceptance?
Yeah, I don't know. All I can say is, just to be really honest, is this is really hard for me, especially, and I'll just say it, I mean, especially people who hate others for who they are, you know, their race or background or religion or sexual orientation or gender or whatever, and people who selfishly are destroying the world and just to enrich themselves. It's, yeah, it's, all I can say is it's rough, rough as hell, yeah.
So what is it? Does it make sense to you, the whole, like, accept that things have come to this point and that things are the way they are, but then that doesn't say anything about from here on out?
I guess that's one of the reasons that I do that I do a lot of meditation, because Kodo Suwaki.
Yes.
And he said something about, this is not the right, well, the right quote would be in Japanese, but this isn't even the right translation. And it was something about, for right now, you know, I'm not going to think about this. Because what I do is I just, it just goes around and around and around in my head, and I just get more and more pissed off and agitated. But when I'm doing Zazen, then for right now, I'm not going to entertain those thoughts.
When you think about it, our practice of Zazen, and really any meditative practice, because you have to set aside all that, right, in order to do the meditative practice, is really a practice of acceptance. Like, in this moment, I'm going to accept things as they are and set aside trying to figure them out or change them. So yeah, it's not easy, but that's what it's all about. I will say a little closing verse. Abiding in this ephemeral world like a lotus in muddy water. The mind is pure and goes beyond. Thus we bow to Buddha. All Buddhas throughout space and time. All honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas. Wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita. Thank you all for coming. Have a good
Thanks, everybody.
Rest of your weekend.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye. Nice to see you.